Hello, and welcome to episode 133. My goodness, Steve, it seems like we've done 75 million episodes by now, and this is 75 million and one, right? That's we've surpassed.
Just the odd one.
Oh, God, we've already started. I haven't even said anything about the topic yet, and we're already chucking it up. Okay.
No, you think that might be a good idea.
So, right, episode 33, one more time, focus, Karina. We are doing this episode about comfort zones and why. Why are we doing this? Because every year, right around this time, I hear the barrage of requests come through saying, I don't know what to do with my New Year's resolutions. I've got some plans, I've got some goals, and I haven't achieved anything, and I'm not sure why. Can you help me? And yes, yes, you've come to the right place. So this episode we've daftly titled, Show Me Your Comfort Zone, and I'll Show You the Goals You've Achieved.
Slightly edgy.
Slightly edgy, cheeky, whatever you want to call it. You know, yeah. Ready for our Patreon supporters to just slap us one, you know, to just be like, hey, you two, the gruesome twosome is back at it again. So we put together a series of articles that I found online. And the goal of this is really, I think, is the first article, actually, Steve, where I'm going to sort of break down this nice graph in the first link that I had sent you, the how to leave your comfort zone. There's a wonderful graphic on literally what the different zones look like. So the comfort zone is where you feel safe and in control, right? And then the one zone just right outside the comfort zone is the fear zone. So you're asking someone to leave where they're safe and toasty and nice and happy and step into areas where they might be affected by others' opinions. They might find excuses, and they probably have an issue of self-confidence.
This is the equivalent of finding a nice straight road, putting the pedal to the metal, but instead of leaving the wheel straight, you suddenly veer off to the right halfway along.
Yeah, I mean,
why did you do that?
Right, everything was going so smoothly, right? That really is the effect of wanting to step out from the comfort zone into the fear zone. But just outside the fear zone, according to this graphic, is the learning zone, where we acquire new skills, we deal with challenges and problems, and then we extend the comfort zone, right? So the comfort zone grows well into what used to be our fear zone. We sort of tackle it and embrace it, and it's
that fear zone that stops you getting into the learning
correct.
Zone.
Correct. Know. And guess what's just outside the learning zone, Steve? It's the growth zone.
Go on.
Growth. Ooh. So this is where you find purpose, task, purpose, motivation. This is where you live your dreams. This is where you set your goals. This is where you realize your aspirations. Everything you've ever wanted. You know, when someone says, how was it? It was better than what I expected and more. The and more part comes when we realize that, in fact, what we wanted outside our comfort zone was in the growth zone. But in order to get there, we've got to expand that comfort zone through the fear zone, through the learning zone, and get to the growth zone. And
it's like the pilots in Days of Yore, where they were approaching the sound barrier.
Mm.
They didn't know what would happen the other side of it.
And right, and then they pushed through and... Right, now we have what we have. So ultimately, this is what is important to base your value statements on. If we're going to be doing value statements to determine what goals we're setting up for the year. So for example, let's say one of the values you have is that you are someone who wants to be culturally connected, right? You just want to... That's what you practice. That's what you do. I know, Steve, you take French classes usually.
Yeah.
Not when you don't.
Not today. But we won't go into
for
that.
The most part, you take your French classes and you take them seriously, not because you have a point to prove, not because you're trying to tell someone off Well, maybe your grocer or something like that. But really what you're trying to do is you're trying to blend. I know there's a thousand quotes that come to my head right now of like, oh, yeah, you blend. But no, we won't do that. So the idea is that you're trying to blend in a society that wasn't originally yours. This is a cultural aspect that you have decided to take on as your own. And you've embraced it as your own, and you said, right, so not only am I going to be English, but I'm going to be French-speaking English, and so that I can appreciate and respect and honor the citizenry around me, right? That's, I mean, I'm sort of speaking for you, but I'd let you speak for yourself.
Yeah, well, originally it was, this is a place where I'd like to live, from the point of view that the lifestyle, the pace of life, the general surroundings appealed to me and my wife as well, of course. It wasn't just a single decision. It was something we aspired to doing later in life when we retired. But the initial thought would be that would be when I would be sort of 60, 65 or whatever. And circumstances changed and we were able to do it a lot sooner. Sort of, oh, you know, a bit of a shock, slight change of pace and all the rest of it. But we had a couple of years in which to sort of adjust to the change of speed, if you like, and find out a bit more about the area we were going to be moving into and stuff like that. But yes, you know, when I think back on it, someone said to me, that was a brave move you made. And I never really thought of it in that sense. But, yeah, I suppose it is in a way. You sort of go into move into a country that's geographically close to where we had been living, but with a completely different culture and different outlook on things. And obviously a completely different language that I didn't understand. I had a very minimal grounding at first, and fortunately Alison was is fluent in French anyway, and she now has French nationality for as of this last week or so. But when we first moved over, because we had the house for about 4 or 5 years before we moved over full time permanently, and I will admit the first few weeks I would be terrified of going out on my own to the shops or something like that. Because
I know the feeling.
Recognising sort of branded products from, you know, where you used to live is one thing. But going to somewhere where the brand names are different and what have you. Now, I was doing things by process of elimination. You know, you've got this line of sort of cleaning products. You know, bleach at one end and sort of washing up liquid at the other, and I'm wanting something in between the two, and something, well, most probably that one.
Now, did you move? You must have moved after the EU changes took place. In other words, you weren't dealing with the French franc; you were dealing with the
they changed over to euros in 2003, I think it was, and we'd been coming over for holidays since 1998.
Right, so then you transitioned over.
Been over each year.
Yeah. So you transitioned in your mind, at least, the currency issue.
That wasn't too bad, though, because once you're in, you know, if you only think in euros, then it's not so bad, really. You just forget doing the conversion every time, which is easy to do.
Without spilling the beans on your end, I think, and if I'm just referencing this back to the first article that we're going to link to with how to leave your comfort zone, but they actually have the first point that they make is the Maslow's pyramid of self-actualization, which I find very helpful in getting to the bottom of what we're trying to achieve in this episode, which if you look at the pyramid at the bottom most, so the widest base of what humans need to succeed, right, to be self-actualized in this case, is you have to have food, water, warmth, and rest. Those are the basic needs of anyone, right? And if you don't have those, then it's very difficult to move on to other aspects of your life. And if I step on your toes here by revealing, I don't want to reveal anything, you don't to, but I remember you and I had a conversation about how you all ended up making this decision to make the move. And I remember you had said something to me about, well, my doctors have said that if I don't make this move, then I'm going to have a less of a chance at health or leading a healthy life.
So let me expand on that. Certainly, I was in a place where I didn't want to be in terms of my long-term health wasn't going to be brilliant if I'd have continued from a stress point of view. You know, my blood pressure was not out of control, but it was becoming very difficult to control. Even with medication, it never really sort of got to down to normal. And that was over sort of 2 or 3 years. And then when we moved here, of course, initially they just continue with the same medication because, well, you've got to start somewhere, haven't you? You've got to start at a baseline and then sort of work forward sort of thing. And over a period of, I don't know, it must have been up to sort of 2 years, so my blood pressure started to, you know, come down and sort of down to sort of normal. And of course the doctor was super pleased about that, and so was I, because all the sort of side effects of having high blood pressure started to dissipate and started to get back to, you know, normal in a way. And so in terms of getting into your comfort zone, you know, I was sort of returning into that through good diet, medication, and just generally not getting stressed out about things. Although you can't think of much something more stressful than living in a country where you don't speak the language.
That's funny. So yeah, you've actually accomplished Maslow's basic needs, right? So his basic needs talk about physiological needs, which are the food, warmth, water, and rest, which you've got. And then now you stepped it up and you got into safety needs, which are security and safety. And so I would argue that the stressors of learning to live in another country and learning a new language are completely different than the stressors of trying to live in a big city and trying to achieve goals for corporations and businesses and governments and things like that, right?
Definitely. So
the way that I've learned it now as a meditation instructor is that stress is a foreign toxin to our body. And it doesn't know what to do with it if we don't have the coping skills to process how to deal with stress. And so the biggest amount of stress, as you saw, so you literally just changed your location, your geographic location, and your blood pressure began to normalize. It's not that you didn't have stresses.
But also sort of taking away the sort of stressful job side of things where I was working to someone else's deadlines all the time.
Correct.
Which I couldn't sort of control.
And now you were working on your own deadlines.
Working to my own deadlines, working with other people, where I wasn't in any contractual obligations to them, and they weren't to me either.
Right.
And that's worked out very well. You know, we both understand where each side is coming from. So if I help them, fine. If they help me, fine. And but they benefit from my help, and their customers help benefit from my help. So, you know, every three parts of the triangle are all sort of satisfied as much as we can.
And
everybody's happy for the outcome. So, you know, with happy customers, you've got a happy company.
Indeed.
With happy customers, I'm happy. And, you know, so the if the customers and the company are happy, then, of course, the company continues to thrive, because the last thing we want is the company to fail.
Correct.
So,
So then once that's satisfied as far as the base of the pyramid moving up towards the point of the pyramid, the next level, once you have your basic needs met, you're moving into the psychological needs, which are intimate relationships, friends, and then feelings of accomplishment. So you can't achieve those things unless you know that you are secure and safe and healthy and that you're getting fed and watered like a plant, and that everything is going to be set in their life. And the reason I'm being pedantic about this this pyramid and why we're like, we all know, right, that setting up our priorities and understanding what's important is crucial to succeeding in life. But again, this comes down to what your definition of success is. Because I guarantee you there would have been people that looked at you whilst you lived in the UK and said, hey, you're a successful guy. And you could have looked them right in the eye and said, I don't think so, because here's what's missing for me in my life. It's my health or my quality of life, really, is what it was.
Yeah. When I was in my last job in UK, it was very much, I sort of parachuted into a job, more or less. I was very comfortable at doing it because the sort of type of work I was doing is stuff that I've done before, whereas the job didn't exist prior to me arriving. So consequently, people were wondering, well, how is he going to do this job? This job didn't exist before. How are we going to know?
He's a magician.
If he succeeded.
He pulls out a magic wand and makes it happen.
Yeah, almost. Sort of the rabbit out of the hat type.
Yeah, except you were the rabbit in this one.
Well, almost. Yeah. But yeah, it's not really till sort of after the event that you sort of think back. Because when you're in amongst it all, you can't see the wood for the trees sort of thing, can you? You're sort of trying to make sense out of it, and you're just too busy coping with the sort of day-to-day pressures sort of thing. It's not until you sort of stand back from it and think, well, did I do that job to the best of my ability?
Yeah.
What did I bring to the party, as
what
it were?
What value-added content?
What was the value I added to the thing?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I know for a fact that what I did then, whether it's, you know, it's 12 years or so now since I left, so I don't know what's happened since then. It could have all fallen apart for all I know.
Right.
But I'm satisfied that I did what I could do at the time to the best of my ability and make a success of the whole thing. And I left them in a sort of state of play where things had stabilised and been normalised, and
right.
sort of they now had a set of procedures to follow. And if they carried on doing those, they would have been able to continue.
Yeah.
Obviously, the other thing that I am conscious about, not only from that job, but also with what I do now in the sort of planner community, it's not about taking it to a level and then stopping. I'm always trying to push a little bit at a time. Okay, the gains that you make in the first 6 months, 12 months might be massive. You know, you're getting used to working with each other and all this sort of thing. And you might be able to spot some things within a company that one small change can make a massive difference to their customer satisfaction or whatever it might be. But then once you've done that, you've then got to, it's looking for the small gains, and it's all sort of like an incremental.
Well, it's a sophistication of skills, isn't it? Because if you can do the big things well, then you start looking for the microscopic things to do well, because now you're looking for long-term success, not just short-term gains. And I think if be a lamb, Steve, click on the article that I sent you on Basecamp, the very first article, if you can, the How to Leave Your Comfort Zone. I'd like for you to look at this pyramid with me, because I think what you're explaining right now is the blue layer inside the pyramid, which sits under psychological needs. And this literally, what you're talking about, reflects what Maslow considers the esteem needs. In other words, feelings of accomplishment. And if you, as the sovereign of Steve Morton, said to yourself, well, I'm good with having achieved what I've achieved, but I know that there's more that I could do, then all of a sudden you're coming back down to, or going up to the next tip, I guess would be, of the next layer of the pyramid, which is the self-actualization, achieving one's full potential, and including creative activities. And so
Right.
Yeah. Do you see it? So you went from that blue slip there, that cross section of the pyramid, to then realizing that suddenly your safety needs needed addressing, right? So you were achieving all of these goals, and then you said, wait a minute, but if I do this, DACA said that it's not going to be helpful for me to lead a quality life. So you dropped back down from blue to green, and you said, wait a minute, I've got to address this health issue or quality of life issue. And so it's impossible to be creative and to live in one's full potential, which is at the top of the pyramid, if one is still addressing the basic safety and security needs.
Yeah, you've got to extend yourself a that bit further.
Correct, correct, exactly. Yeah. And I think the reason I've chosen your slice of life as the example to this is because a lot of people think that making a value statement or coming up with a goal is easy. You just sit down and you write something out. And it can be. It can be just as easy as that. But if you find that you're spinning around and you're getting repeated patterns of things that are not making you happy, or the quality of your life is missing, or the value content added that you're bringing to the table of whatever projects you're working on, or where you're working, or things that you're giving your time to are not fulfilling you, then you need to go back and look at the other layers below to see what's not being met first. So if you don't have quality food, water, warmth, rest, security, and safety, and health, I would add health to all of that, because ultimately that's what you want,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
If those aren't being met, it is very difficult to be the creative and self-actualized person that you can be, because you haven't fed the fundamentals of that pyramid. In other words, it's a shaky pyramid on which you're building your life. So it's vital, and I think that's why we're including it in today's chat, because if you want to see yourself grow, that growth circle can become your comfort zone, and then you have to move out of that growth circle into the next comfort zone. It's ever evolving. It's an organic process by which we all have to review and constantly check in with ourselves to say, am I meeting the goals that I had for myself? And if I don't have goals for myself, why not? What are the things that are stopping me having goals? And this is a really honest conversation to have with oneself before setting up New Year's resolutions, before setting in goals, because once you have those, then you become, as Hiram Smith says, you become lethal in the ability to govern yourself and be able to actually implement things that you want to see happen in your life. And so would you rate that your quality of life now is better than the quality of life you had in the UK before you made that mindset decision?
Oh, yeah, even on sort of less money per year, definitely, because there's less things to sort of worry about on a sort of weekly, monthly basis now compared to before. And, you know, it's a more relaxing life. We can be very busy. This week is no exception. But you know, it's more under our control than someone else's.
Yeah.
Someone else isn't setting the sort of goals and deadlines for us. We set our own, and we sort of work at it as a team, and sort of we know where we're both heading for. Whereas I suppose when we were both working in our own jobs before, it was very difficult to do that because we were both doing completely separate things. And, you know, life just sort of seemed to sort of meld in the middle somewhere. Whereas now we're both working towards the same sort of outcomes.
Well, and it also seems that you're doing your life on purpose instead of letting it happen to you. And so I would argue that, in fact, this is the same argument that Janet Lurz makes in her book, Simple Living. If anybody wants a concept of how to start simple living, I highly recommend that book. The concept is not outdated. The stories might come across as a little bit outdated, but basically she says that if you are a two-income family, switching to a one-income actually makes your life better. And you think, well, what? How can that possibly be? You know, you need more money. But exactly what you just said, that you went down in terms of how much money you were making, but the quality of your life improved tremendously. And those were categoric decisions that you and Allison made for yourselves because you sat yourselves down and said, right, well, what do we want out of this life? What do we want to experience at the end of the day? And I think those are such valid questions to ask oneself before writing down goals, before even writing down values.
In sort of a different sort of scenario where you may have goals that are set in a work environment, purely only in the work environment, where sometimes people sort of struggle to set their sort of annual goals or achievement levels or whatever you want to call them these days. And I used to sort of sit with my members of staff and sort of work through, right, what have you done in this last year? And they would sometimes struggle to think about, well, what they had they achieved, what went well, what didn't go so well, and all the rest of it. But from that discussion, we could very quickly sort of line out sort of maybe up to no more than, say, five things or thereabouts that they should consider looking at for the forthcoming year, sort of thing. And then, of course, once you've then got those agreed, at the end, maybe 6 months in, you can look back at what you'd agreed at the start of the period and decide to sort of say, right, how is it going? Do you need to change this in some way? Maybe you've set a too high a goal to show sort of level of achievement and all the rest of it. And that was always, I found that quite rewarding in a way, to work with them on setting their goals. So you didn't impose them on them. It's they came up with the thing. So they owned the thing as much as anything else.
Right. So I would think that as a manager or department head or someone in the position like you had to be able to run a ship with that status, you were automatically bringing people to the top of the pyramid. You were saying, well, here's what we have. What are the facts for this year? What actual numbers can you show me that you've produced this year or widgets or whatever it is you were doing? And then allowing them, based on those results, to see for themselves what they wanted to achieve. Because it's very difficult, I think, especially when people are clocking in and clocking out on a daily basis where they know they've got to show up, to see the big picture. They just sort of show up and they do it, and they're not really thinking, well, I'm just getting paid to do that. I really don't know what I'm doing, but I'm getting paid to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's always a difficult one. You were being paid to do, that was the job you were being paid to do. But you can actually show that you were doing it not just to what was acceptable level, you were going beyond that level sort of thing.
Right.
Now, in the sort of five goals, if you like, for want of a better word, that we would set, not all of them would stretch the person well outside of their comfort zone. They would be graduated so that they could see their own progression. Now, the one that's at the absolute highest of the levels, if you like, might have been one that they were working on in the previous year at a slightly lower level.
Right.
So we were just looking to extend them just that bit more. And then once they'd achieved something on whatever it was, you would sort of say, right, what haven't we covered yet?
Yeah.
What would you like to do? Have you thought of anything that you would love to learn about that you've not done yet?
And that's just, I mean, that's what a good manager should do. That's that's the whole point of having someone who has senior level experience versus junior level experience. Mm. And I tell my clients all the time, especially when it comes to career coaching, and this is where you're get the planners at the ready here, folks, because when you're sat at work and you are detailing the amount of work that you're doing or what quality work you're doing to achieve projects, then you take that planner and you put it on a piece of paper in terms of presenting it to your boss of what you've accomplished throughout the year. Guess who's heading towards a promotion? This is how you head towards promotions. Now, Steve is the kind of person that I already have that. I've worked with him. We haven't worked with him in a sense that we were getting paid by a common boss, but we get paid by you all. And I can see that working with him, he actually cares about what he does. He cares about the people around him. He cares about making sure the team is lifted up just as high as he is, so that, and he would, there's nothing that Steve would tell me to do that he wouldn't do himself. I know that. I've seen that. So I can see that in his, you know.
Now, before you put me on too high a pedestal now.
Oh, your pants, Steve. You're just pants.
I will say that whilst I think I was very good at setting other people's goals and standards and what have you for the forthcoming year, and I could work with them to sort of highlight where they needed to improve, what they could stretch themselves a little bit more, and all the rest of it. I was totally hopeless at doing my own.
Of course, because the cobbler's kids always have the worst shoes, right?
Exactly.
And that's why we need brainstorming sessions, and that's why I think Steve and I like doing this so much, because it allows us the space in which we can learn and grow from one another and push each other to say, look, I mean, what was it? It was just 2 years ago you weren't contextualizing anything, and now you're contextualizing everything, right? It was just a learning moment
exactly
for you.
This is the thing, is I wasn't making the best use of the planner. The planner hasn't changed.
Correct.
It's still the same planner,
the
same layout. I'm just using it far better now than I was 2 years ago. You know, suddenly a sort of light bulb moment. If I did this, then I wouldn't have these sort of surprises during the day or during the week sort of thing.
So I know we're getting close to the end of the podcast, but I don't want to hurry us up just quite out of this topic. I would say that for anyone out there listening and wondering what to do with goals and values, I would say look at the articles that we're going to link up, especially the one, How to Leave Your Comfort Zone, and check out the comfort zone graphic, because if you want to be successful, start with the end in mind. We've always said this. Start with how you imagine your life to be, what you imagine your goal that you've achieved to look like and feel like on a daily basis, and then work your way backwards inside your planner. Create the levels of activity or tasks or actions that you need to take to get you there. And if it's a small one, you're not going to notice the fear zone. The smaller your goals are, the smaller the effect of fear will come over you. Now, I highly recommend big goals. Lofty goals are fantastic because it pushes you.
Oh, yes,
it catapults
right.
you out of that fear zone.
But you also have to realize that if you're unsuccessful with achieving the high level that you've set yourself, that can be very demotivating.
It can. And you can also realize that...
But it depends on how ambitious you are.
What's the worst that could happen is you end up with the status quo, which is what you have now. And that may not be the most wonderful outcome for you. You may have wanted to succeed, but it's still where you are now is not where you were 10 years ago. So still you're achieving, and you just need to adjust your goal at that point, I would say. Instead of getting rid of it, I would say it just needs more baby steps, or it needs to be a little bit more realistic in terms of how to get there. But that's what I had to say about today's episode, Steve.
We got there. So, where can we find you? On the interwebs.
You can find me meditating on my meditation cushions at theayurvedic.co and the Ayurvedic 108 on Instagrams and Planarology and Throat Punch Resumes. Where can we find you, Steve?
You will find me in the usual place of falafaxi.com, travelersnotebooktimes.com, and Mr. Falafaxi on Instagram. I must get back to posting some stuff on there. It's very easy to get out of the habit. And don't forget, folks, if you've enjoyed our ramblings and you wonder what on earth we were talking about, well, don't forget to like it, subscribe to it, and share it.